Hello, darklings, and welcome to the Nocturnal Mysteries Podcast, a show about the paranormal, supernatural, mysterious, and things that go bump in the night. I'm your host, Jenny. Please come and join me. Sit down and place your fingers on the planchette, and let's jump right into this nocturnal mystery. Listener, I'm not sure about you, but the paranormal and supernatural, and then later horror, played a big part in my childhood. Growing up in the 80s and 90s, there were a few television shows and books that really helped shape my love for all things creepy. Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark was definitely one of these influences. I remember getting these books repeatedly from the school library and then later the Scholastic Book Fair and being scared for days. There are three books in the series written by Alvin Schwartz with beautiful grayscale illustrations by Stephen Gammell. The images themselves are enough to give you a fright. The stories included in the book are not original stories, but popular ghost stories and American urban legends that were spread around by word of mouth before being collected and written down. Many of us who were children in the 80s and 90s heard these stories on school playgrounds, at summer camps, or at sleepovers, even if we didn't read them in the books themselves first. The stories were frightening, yet familiar, and reading them as an adult brings a sense of creepy nostalgia and memories of Halloween's past. On this episode, I will be doing something a little different as a Halloween treat. I will be reading you five of my favorite stories from the Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark series. So settle in and be prepared for a fright this Halloween night. The Babysitter. It was 9 o'clock in the evening. Everybody was sitting on the couch in front of the TV. There were Richard, Brian, Jenny, and Doreen, the babysitter. The telephone rang. "Maybe it's your mother," said Doreen. She picked up the phone. Before she could say a word, a man laughed hysterically and hung up. "Who was it?" asked Richard. "Some nut," said Doreen. "What did I miss?" At 9:30, the telephone rang again. Doreen answered it. It was a man who had called before. "I'll be there soon," he said, and he laughed and hung up. "Who was it?" the children asked. "Some crazy person," she said. About 10 o'clock, the telephone rang again. Jenny got to it first. "Hello," she said. It was the same man. "One more hour," he said, and he laughed and hung up. "He said one more hour. What did he mean?" asked Jenny. "Don't worry," said Doreen. "It's somebody fooling around." "I'm scared," said Jenny. About 10:30, the telephone rang once more. When Doreen picked it up, the man said, "Pretty soon now," and he laughed. "Why are you doing this?" Doreen screamed, and he hung up. "Was it that guy again?" asked Brian. "Yes," said Doreen. "I'm going to call the operator and complain." The operator told her to call back if it happened again, and she would try to trace the call. At 11 o'clock, the telephone rang again. Doreen answered it. "Very soon now," the man said, and he laughed and hung up. Doreen called the operator. Almost at once, she called back. "That person is calling from a telephone upstairs," she said. "You better leave. I'll get the police." Just then, a door upstairs opened. A man they had never seen before started down the stairs towards them. As they ran from the house, he was smiling in a very strange way. A few minutes later, the police found him there and arrested him. The Dream. Lucy Morgan was an artist. She had spent a week painting in a small country town and decided that the next day she would move on. She would go to a village called Kingston. But that night, Lucy Morgan had a strange dream. She dreamed that she was walking up a dark, carved staircase and entered a bedroom. It was an ordinary room, except for two things. The carpet was made up of large squares that looked like trap doors, and each of the windows were fastened shut with big nails that stuck up out of the wood. In her dream, Lucy Morgan went to sleep in that bedroom. During the night, a woman with a pale face and black eyes and long black hair came into the room. She leaned over the bed and whispered, "This is an evil place. Flee while you can." When the woman touched her arm to hurry her along, Lucy Morgan awakened from her dream with a shriek. She lay awake the rest of the night, trembling. In the morning, she told her landlady that she had decided not to go to Kingston after all. "I can't tell you why," she said, "but I just can't bring myself to go there." "Then why don't you go to Dorset?" the landlady said. "It's a pretty town, and it isn't too far." So Lucy Morgan went to Dorset. Someone told her she could find a room in a house at the top of the hill. It was a pleasant-looking house, and the landlady there, a plump, motherly woman, was as nice as could be. "Let's look at the room," she said. "I think you'll like it." They walked up a dark, carved staircase, like the one in Lucy's dream. In these old houses, the staircases are all the same, Lucy thought. But when the landlady opened the door to the bedroom, it was the room in her dreams, with the same carpet that looked like trap doors and the same windows fastened with big nails. "This is just a coincidence," Lucy told herself. "How do you like it?" the landlady asked. "I'm not sure," she said. "Well, take your time," the landlady said. "I'll bring up some tea while you think about it." Lucy sat on the bed, staring at the trap doors and the big nails. Soon there was a knock at the door. "It's the landlady with the tea," she thought. But it wasn't the landlady. It was the woman with the pale face and the black eyes and the long black hair. Lucy Morgan grabbed her things and fled. The Dead Hand. The village huddled on the edge of a vast swamp. As far as one could see, there were soggy meadows, holes filled with black water, and glistening sheets of wet, spongy peat. Skeletons of giant trees, snags the people called them, rose up out of the muck, their dead branches reaching out like long, twisted arms. During the day, the men in the village cut the peat and hauled it home to dry and sell for fuel. But when the sun went down and the wind, sighing and moaning, came in from the sea, the men were quick to leave. Strange creatures took over the swamp at night, and some even came into the village. That's what everyone said. People were so afraid they would not go out alone after dark. Young Tom Pattison was the only person in the village who did not believe in these creatures. On his way home from work, he'd whisper to his friends, "There's one," and they would jump and run, and Tom would laugh and laugh. Finally, some of his friends turned on him. "If you know so much," they said, "go back into the swamp some night and see what comes of it." "I'll do it," Tom said. "I work out there every day. Not once have I ever seen anything to frighten me. Why should it be different at night? Tomorrow night, I'll take my lantern and walk out to the willow snag. If I get scared and run, I'll never make fun of you again." The next night, the men went to Tom Pattison's house to see him on his way. Thick clouds covered the moon. It was the blackest of nights. When they arrived, Tom's mother was pleading with him not to go. "I'll be all right," he said. "There's nothing to be afraid of. Don't be foolish like the rest." He took his lantern and, singing to himself, headed down the spongy path towards the willow snag. Some of the young men wondered if Tom wasn't right. Maybe they were afraid of things that did not exist. A few decided to follow him and see for themselves, but they stayed far behind in case he ran into trouble. They were sure they saw dark shapes moving about, but Tom's lantern kept bobbing up and down, and Tom's songs kept floating back to them, and nothing happened. Finally, they caught sight of the willow snag. There was Tom, standing in a circle of light, looking this way and that. All of a sudden, the wind blew out his lantern, and Tom stopped singing. The men stood stock still in the blackness, waiting for something awful to happen. The clouds shifted, and the moon came out. There was Tom again. Now only he had his back pushed up against the willow snag, and he had his arms out in front of him as if he were fighting something off. From where the men stood, it looked like dark shapes were swirling in around him. Then the clouds covered the moon again. Once more, it was as black as pitch. When the moon came out again, Tom was hanging on to the willow snag with one arm. His other arm was stretched out in front of him as if something was pulling at it. It looked to the men as if a rotting, moldy hand with no arm, a dead hand, had grabbed Tom's hand. With one final wrench, whatever had a hold of Tom jerked him into the muck. That's what the men said. When the clouds blotted out the moon once more, the men turned and ran through the blackness towards the village. Again and again, they lost the path and fell into the muck and water holes. In the end, they crawled back on their hands and knees, but Tom Pattison was not with them. In the morning, the people searched everywhere for Tom. Finally, they gave him up for lost. A few weeks later, toward evening, the villagers heard a cry. It was Tom's mother. She was rushing down the path from the swamp, shouting and waving. When she was sure the villagers had spotted her, she turned and ran back. Off they went after her. They found young Tom Pattison by the willow snag, groaning and gibbering as if he had lost his mind. He kept pointing with one hand at something only he could see. Where his other hand should have been, there was nothing but a ragged stump oozing blood. The hand had been ripped clean off. Everybody said it was the dead hand that had done it, but nobody really knows. Nobody will ever know except Tom Pattison. And he never spoke another word again. The White Satin Evening Gown. A young man invited a young woman to a formal dance, but she was very poor and she could not afford to buy the evening gown she needed for such an occasion. "Maybe you can rent a dress," her mother said. So she went to a pawn shop not far from where she lived. There she found a white satin evening gown in her size. She looked lovely in it, and she was able to rent it for very little. When she arrived at the dance with her friend, she was so attractive, everyone wanted to meet her. She danced again and again, and was having a wonderful time. But then she began to feel dizzy and faint, and she asked her friend to take her home. "I think I've danced too much," she told him. When she got home, she lay down on her bed. The next morning, her mother found that her daughter had died. The doctor did not understand what had caused her death, so he had the coroner perform an autopsy. The coroner found that she had been poisoned by embalming fluid. It had stopped her blood from flowing. There were traces of the fluid on her dress. He decided it had entered her skin when she perspired while she was dancing. The pawnbroker said he bought the dress from an undertaker's helper. It had been used in a funeral for another young woman, and the helper had stolen it just before she was buried. Harold. When it got hot in the valley, Thomas and Alfred drove their cows up to a cool green pasture in the mountains to graze. Usually they stayed there with the cows for 2 months, then they brought them down to the valley again. The work was easy enough, but oh, it was boring. All day, the two men tended their cows. At night, they went back to the tiny hut where they lived. They ate supper and worked in the garden and went to sleep. It was always the same. Then Thomas had an idea that changed everything. "Let's make a doll the size of a man," he said. "It would be fun to make, and we could put it in the garden to scare away the birds." "And it should look like Harold," Alfred said. Harold was a farmer they both hated. They made the doll out of old sacks stuffed with straw. They gave it a pointy nose like Harold's and tiny eyes like his. Then they added dark hair and a twisted frown. Of course, they also gave it Harold's name. Each morning, on their way to the pasture, they tied Harold to a pole in the garden to scare away the birds. Each night, they brought him inside so that he wouldn't get ruined if it rained. When they were feeling playful, they would talk to him. One of them might say, "How are the vegetables growing today, Harold?" Then the other, making believe he was Harold, would answer in a crazy voice, very slowly. They both would laugh, but not Harold. Whenever something went wrong, they took it out on Harold. They would curse at him, even kick him or punch him. Sometimes one of them would take the food they were eating, which they were both sick of, and smear it on the doll's face. "How do you like that stew, Harold?" he would ask. "Well, you better eat it, or else." Then the two men would howl with laughter. One night, after Thomas had wiped Harold's face with food, Harold grunted. "Did you hear that?" Alfred asked. "It was Harold," Thomas said. "I was watching him when it happened. I can't believe it." "How could he grunt?" Alfred asked. "He's just a sack of straw. It's not possible." "Let's throw him in the fire," said Thomas, "and that will be that." "Let's not do anything stupid," said Alfred. "We don't know what's going on. When we move the cows down, we'll leave him behind. For now, let's just keep an eye on him." So they left Harold sitting in a corner of the hut. They didn't talk to him or take him outside anymore. Now and then the doll grunted, but that was all. After a few days, they decided there was nothing to be afraid of. Maybe a mouse or some insects had gotten inside Harold and were making those sounds. So Thomas and Alfred went back to their old ways. Each morning, they put Harold out in the garden, and each night, they brought him back into the hut. When they felt playful, they joked with him. When they felt mean, they treated him as badly as ever. Then one night, Alfred noticed something that frightened him. "Harold is growing," he said. "I was thinking the same thing," Thomas said. "Maybe it's just our imagination," Alfred replied. "We have been up here on this mountain too long." The next morning, while they were eating, Harold stood up and walked out of the hut. He climbed up on the roof and trotted back and forth like a horse on its hind legs. All day and all night long, he trotted like that. In the morning, Harold climbed down and stood in a far corner of the pasture. The men had no idea what he would do next. They were afraid. They decided to take the cows down into the valley the same day. When they left, Harold was nowhere in sight. They felt as if they had escaped a great danger and began joking and singing. But when they had gotten only a mile or two, they realized they had forgotten to bring the milking stools. Neither one wanted to go back for them, but the stools would cost a lot to replace. "There really is nothing to be afraid of," they told one another. "After all, what could a doll do?" They drew straws to see which one would go back. It was Thomas. "I'll catch up with you," he said, and Alfred walked on towards the valley. When Alfred came to a rise in the path, he looked back for Thomas. He did not see him anywhere, but he did see Harold. The doll was on the roof of the hut again. As Alfred watched, Harold kneeled and stretched out a bloody skin to dry in the sun. Thank you so much for joining me for this episode of the Nocturnal Mysteries podcast. I will be back in 2 weeks' time with a new episode for you. If you would like to keep up with the show, you can follow me on Instagram at Nocturnal Mysteries Pod, TikTok at Nocturnal Mysteries, on Twitter or X at NoctMissPod, and there's also a Facebook group you can join called Nocturnal Mysteries Podcast. After the episode releases, I will post pictures of some of the things I talked about so you can get a visual of what I was talking about and any other interesting tidbits that I can dig up. If you have anything you would like to hear me cover on the show, please don't hesitate to reach out on social media and let me know. Also, I'm honored to be part of Bad Secret Media with one of my personal favorite podcasts, The Secret Levels Podcast. You can go to badsecretmedia.com to find all the information on all the shows under the Bad Secret Media umbrella. If you would like to support the show, the best thing you can do is rate or review the show wherever you listen to it. This will help others find the show and share in the spooky with us. All episodes are researched and written by myself and edited by the man behind the mysteries, the show's executive producer, Toby Von Doom. The show would not be what it is without all the hard work he does with all of his editing magic. You can find him on social media at Toby Von Doom. Until next time, stay curious, stay weird, stay kind, and before leaving the board, don't forget to always say goodbye.